Fonzie's Voices of the West, dedicated to the principle that America was better off when our TV shows featured cowboys instead of lawyers.
And welcome, everybody, to Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. I'm producer Harry Alexander, along with co-host Bunker de France. And hopefully we'll have Todd Roberts in here someplace along the line. We haven't been able to raise him as yet. Today we're going to be doing stuff about cowboy serials, those old movies that ran in chapters that we used to go watch when we were kids at the movie house. And a reminder for you, we'd love to have you check out our Facebook page, Voices of the West at Facebook. I believe that's how that's supposed to go. It's, is that right? Yeah. Yeah. Voices of the West at Voices of the West, Facebook. Yeah, that's how it is.
That's pretty simple.
I know it is.
It is.
So check us out, like us, and do tune into the program. If you have a question or two that you'd like to get answered or just shoot the breeze with us, give us an email. Send us an email at voicesofthewest@gmail.com. We'll be happy to get it going there for you. Not able to do the phone calls just quite yet because, well,
we're still stringing the wire.
You know, and I don't have enough Dixie cups to make it work.
Yeah. So, Two cans and a string.
So that's what we're doing. So this is a program about the Old West. Anything about the Old West is fair game, and even the New West is fair game.
Yeah, West is West.
We'll be doing a...
Well, I got a question for you. We got started. Now, we're talking about cream of wheat and a bowl of oatmeal.
Shot from cannons.
That's it. That's cereal.
That's right. Shot from cannons. That's Quaker Puffed Rice.
Yeah, you know, just to let you folks know, we're kind of like a trail drive here today. We've lost our outriders. Unfortunately, our other co-host, Joe Dreyfus, isn't with us today. He's had a death in the family, and our thoughts and our prayers are with Joe and his family. I hope everything's going okay for them. And, Todd, I've got a theory that he's on a train somewhere in the West with James West and Artemus Gordon on a secret mission for U.S. Grant, our president. And hopefully he'll get the message through telegraph for smoke signal, and he'll connect with us. And that's kind of where we are right now.
Yeah, pretty much, pretty much. That's Todd knows the number to call, so get him on the
call
air.
Call us, Todd, if you're listening. You know, if you're getting it on, even if you're not listening, call
us. Give us a call. All right, the Old West, Old Western serials, man. You and I mean, you're just a touch older than I am, but you probably saw more of them than I did. But, I mean, I remember going in Tucson to the Fox Theater on a Saturday morning.
I went there.
And watching Old West serials and Batman serials and The Shadow and stuff like that. What is the definition of a serial?
Well, a serial basically is something that's a continuation of from one day to the next or in one chapter to the next. The early movie producers, when the movies first started, and they started doing the longer 4, 5, 6 reel productions, they were looking for various ways to hook their audiences and get people to come to. They didn't have a problem, but they wanted them to come back to a specific producer. And they looked around and they saw that in the newspapers and the magazines that one of the most popular features were the serials, the continued stories. You know, everybody forgets that, like, Charles Dickens made his living writing these continued stories that later were put together as great novels.
Right, in the Saturday Evening Post.
Exactly. Well, I don't know if Dickens wrote for the Saturday Times, probably.
But there were authors that did Saturday Evening Post.
Oh, yeah, like Collier's, all those old great magazines.
And Harper's and so forth, yeah.
Oh, Harper's. If anybody, you can find old issues of Harper's, grab them. There's a couple of books out that are compilations. And they're with engravings. They are a treasure of information, of just fun to read. And we love that stuff anyway. Now, one of the things, just to let you know, I'll kind of bring you up to date, they didn't know whether these early serials would just be a novelty or whether they would catch on. And they not only caught on, but for a long time during the silent pictures, the serials were more popular than the features.
Wow.
And the stars of the serials were known more to the public than the regular, because, well, they were seeing them every week.
So it was
kind of just logical. Now, this is an interesting point here. The very first serial, which was from a printed newspaper and shown on the screen, was What Happened to Mary. It was released by the Edison Company in 1912.
Wow.
And, you know, this What Happened to Mary was starred Mary Fisher. And she did several Western serials and stuff like that. And she was kind of the first of the serial queens.
Interesting.
You know, everybody kind of remembers Pearl White. You know, The Adventures of Pearl and Nyoka of the Jungle.
Right.
But Mary Fuller was kind of the first. Another serial actor was a lady named Kathleen Williams. She did a lot of exciting films. And then going on down here, we've got Helen Holmes, who did a Western serial called Lass of the Tumberlands.
Hmm.
Now, you know, a lot of people will say, well, you know, the lumbering pictures and Mounties are not Westerns.
Well, of course they are.
Or train pictures. Westerns. You know, Pilgrim Rock was the West at one time.
Our definition of a Western is if it holds what we term as the code of the West, then it's a Western. It doesn't matter what part of the country it happens, where it happens. I mean, Sergeant Preston and I mean, that's a Western.
Well, you know, it's about the heritage, the history, you know, and the values.
Right, the code.
Exactly. And, you know, it's like we've talked about this, and I firmly believe, with a few exceptions, most Civil War movies are really Westerns in the South.
Oh, I agree.
You know, it's just, you got guys on horseback shooting each other.
I agree.
That's what it takes.
Yep.
Now, another lady back then was a lady named Ruth Rowland, and she did at least three that I'm sure of. That's Ruth of the Range, The Avenging Arrow. That makes you want to come back next week anyway. And White Eagle, which that was done with our hero, Buck Jones.
Mm.
You know, one of the great guys that did this stuff. And just to give you an idea, that between 1912 and 1930, more than 250 serials were made. This is during the silent era.
Wow.
None of it just...
Wow. That put a lot of people to work, didn't it?
Got a lot of people to the movies,
Yeah.
I'll just run through a couple.
And do we remember what the cost of a movie was back then?
Well,
nickel, dime, somewhere in there.
Well, what do they call it? Nickelodeons.
Well, Nickelodeons,
And at the first theaters, I'm sure to compete with the Nickelodeons, probably were charging a comparable price.
Mm-hmm.
And it was probably only later, you know, when they were doing the longer, you know, 4, 5, 6 reels, which, you know, you're talking about the equivalent of about an hour show, maybe a little more or less.
Because
Just to give you an idea, a lot of the serials, the 13 and 15 chapter serials, they ran from around 4 hours to a little over 4.25 hours.
Now, how much, you mentioned the number of reels. Now, how much film can they, or content can they put onto one reel?
I'm guessing, and this is just guess because I'm not a cameraman and I don't, and I think it would also...
Yeah, but you've been in the movies. You've been in the movies and you should know.
I'm not a cameraman because a lot of time it depends on the size of the reel.
Okay.
You know, it could be a small, you know, like you're thinking like if you're shooting 35 millimeter, that's going to be probably a reel about the size of an apple pie, maybe a little bit bigger.
Okay.
If you're shooting 16, it's probably half that or smaller. If you're shooting 8, it's even smaller. And people forget that it's just like nowadays, people are shooting movies with their camera.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, with their phone, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's kind of relative because way back then, you know, in 1929, the Big Trail it was like 70 millimeter. That's what Cinerama is.
Yeah,
it's just a super large. It's a larger film, and the larger the film, then that means the larger
space.
The canister, the wider and everything like that.
Okay.
So but I would say roughly around a 15 minute plus minus.
Okay.
You know, because again, you know, and a lot of times back then too, the early students, what they would do is they would go to like Kodak or Edison or whoever and they would buy ends, which would be unused portions of film. Because when a film would shoot, and they still do this today, what they don't do, it would go back to whoever they bought the film from. They would get credit, and then they would put it back together in a reel or in shorter reels.
Yeah. I just remember from my days in brief days in television, when we would show things on film, we had the burn marks, and to let us know when the next projector should start. And same in the movies.
Yeah, because sometimes you're sitting there in the serial or in the movie, you'd be sitting, all of a sudden you'd see these little arrows or little dots or something would happen on the screen. You'd go, what was that?
well, we call them cigarette burns.
Cowboys and aliens. I'm going to just run down a quick, real short list of some of the silent westerns, just because I think they're neat. Winners of the West was Universal with Art Accord, directed by Edward Lemille. And Art Accord was big. I mean, you know, he was big like Clark Gable big or Robert Taylor big. People don't even know who he is today. That's so sad because these guys were a major contributor to the entertainment of America during a very dark period, you know, the Depression. There was another one. This is kind of a favorite. This is another Art Accord. Days of Buffalo Bill with Edward O'Neill again as Decker. And then there was Pearls of the Yukon. That was Universal with William Desmond and directed by Francis Ford, who was John Ford's older brother. Ford did a ton of serials as an actor, a director, and then later character actor, well known from his brother's films. And that's just, you know, that's just as much. Oh, and then there's Timber Queen, which was done in 1922, and that was with Ruth Roland again, our first lady. Fred Jackman directed it. There was Steel Trail with William Desmond. William Duncan directed it in 23.
Yeah, we're still in the silence.
Yeah, these are all silence, yeah. Days of Daniel Boone. You know, it's like, we think of Fess Parker, Daniel Boone.
Right.
And we had a Daniel Boone here, Jack Mower, in 1923.
Well, you know, and moving up, the Lone Ranger. There were serials of the Lone Ranger dating back to, 37, 38? Long before Clayton Moore got involved and Hart.
Yeah, here we go. Came out 12th of February, 1938.
Mm-hmm.
And it was with, the director was John English and William Whitney. Wild Bill Whitney, that was still working up into the 60s. I actually had the pleasure of working for him a couple of times. It was a nice man. He's better known, though, as Wild Bill Whitney. And his favorite phrase was they'd go, action, and then you would hear, knock on it, knock on it. Oh, it was great. Well, here's one. This is a great one because... And this is because this is kind of a landmark serial, 1924, The Riddle Rider with William Desmond. And he went on to do several of the Riddle Rider. That's a tongue twister.
Yeah, say that fast three times.
Say that fast.
Nope, not going to try.
Got to be careful. You guys can get in trouble with that one.
Not going to try.
Another Galloping Hooves. I love the titles. And then Leather Stockings in 1924, which was, you know, the Fenimore Cooper takeoff on those. Again, the back east, Ohio Valley,
Illinois. That was the West.
But that was the West of that day.
That's right.
Let's see if there's any other worth mentioning in here. Oh, here we go. Fighting with Buffalo Bill, Wallace McDonald, Ray Taylor, who was one of the major serial and B-Western directors. And that's, you know, going back. That shows you how far back these guys go and how, you know, and how enduring they were. Oh, this one. 1927, Whispering Smith Rides Again.
No kidding.
Yeah, well, I think that was a Max Brand novel, if I remember right.
Okay.
And you know, there's a name everybody that loves Western should know.
Yeah.
Because he was one of the most prolific writers of Western movies, and definitely one of the most prolific writers of Western novels. I mean, these guys were amazing. And let's see, anything else there? Oh, Return of the Riddle Rider.
you keep going. I need to go find me some water.
Okay, well, I'm just keep babbling on here. We have also The Vanishing Rider. The writer title is real popular in these days. That was, with a good old William Taylor Desmond and directed by Ray Taylor, and that was 1928. A great title, The Vanishing West. I think that was probably from a Zane Grey with Jack Perrin and directed by Richard Thorpe. And then we have one of the early serials, which was very, very popular, and a lot of people remember, is The Mystery Rider. That was from Universal, William Desmond again, but this time the director was Jack Nielsen. And then in 29, there's Queen of the North Woods. And this is when we're kind of phasing out. But what's make this one so interesting is that the director was Spencer Gordon Bennett, who from before 1929, but he made the last two serials made, and they were made for Columbia in 1956. And when we get up to the modern era, we will talk about that. Anyhow, let's see what else we can kind of throw at you. Oh, Harry's back from the waterhole.
Ah.
Did you dip your beak?
I did. Okay. I feel much better. Thank you.
Well, what do you got to throw at us there, Harry?
I have a commercial break to throw at us.
Okay.
So we'll do that. And, by the way, the bump music for today's program is all theme music from those old Western serials. So we'll be right back on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West.
Stay tuned.
Emil Franzi's Voices of the West will be right back.
You know, one way to really tell if you're at a restaurant that really cares about the food it serves? If it has one, check the bar. You don't have to be much of a drinker to know which liquors are quality. That's why you can tell that Highfalutin, that rapid-fire Western grill at 6780 North Oracle, just south of Ina, really takes pride in what it does by the quality of the liquor it serves and the beer on tap. The choices at the bar are as broad as the menu at Highfalutin, and even the well drinks are more than acceptable. Unlike some places where they just come with a barcode. If a restaurant doesn't care about the quality of its drinks, they've cut corners on the food. Highfalutin never has cut either and never will. Highfalutin, 6780 North Oracle, open daily for lunch and dinner with great sandwiches, salads, pastas, steaks, and comfort foods like pot roast and meatloaf, and even for an occasional
The Senate
drink.
Arizona News Examiner, reporting the stories missed by the mainstream media. Our sources bring you regional, national, and international news from a different perspective. Opinion from top national columnists, plus Eric Peters with auto reviews, Bob Garver on movies, a section on Western heritage, and sports coverage, too. It's a cross-section of information found nowhere else. SOAZNewsX.com. Subscriptions are free at SOAZNewsX.com.
Diamondback Shooting Sports, 7030 East Broadway, has expanded to one of the larger and more successful suppliers of shooting sports and outdoor equipment in town. Great prices on lots of guns from Armalite to Winchester, as well as many used and consignment firearms, ammo, holsters, and leather goods, targets, safes, knives, flashlights, and cleaning supplies. More than before, and now you get room to turn around. They added lots of new stuff at Diamondback, from some great clothing lines to a full-time gunsmithing department, and a wide variety of firearms and safety classes ranging from concealed carry to basic and advanced courses in pistol, rifle, and shotgun. If you haven't been to the new Diamondback just around the corner from the old store, it's time to check things out. Diamondback is open daily at 7030 East Broadway, 886-8338, and at dbackshootingsports.com. And they still have a whole line of police duty gear.
Welcome back to Emil Franzi's Voices of the West.
And we are back on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. That's the Lone Ranger theme from 1938. Yeah, pretty good one there. Before that, we heard the Daredevils of the West, 1943. And unfortunately, I don't have the actors' names or any of that stuff to pass on to you. I can find it, but, you know, I'm just not that prepared.
Well, you know, we can't do all the work for them out there. We just got to get them so excited and worked up.
That's right.
That they go, I've got to know who did that.
Well, and we got it. I think we need to spill the beans here. On the National Day of the Cowboy down at the Empire Ranch, that's coming up the last Saturday of July. And don't remember.
It was the fourth Saturday.
Fourth Saturday, okay. Yeah. fourth Saturday of July. It's always the fourth Saturday of July. And we're going to be celebrating the National Day of the Cowboy. And we're going to have some old cereals that we're going to run in our barn. And these are all these are public domain, so there's no copyright infringement or any of that other stuff. And great old stuff. We're going to do Riders of Death Valley, Buck Jones, Dick Foran, and bunches of other cowboy extras that you have seen in a lot of different things, like Noah Beery Jr. You know him as the father and Jim Garner's, what was the detective series?
Rockford?
The Rockford Files.
Oh, Noah Beery Jr.?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Glenn Strange, who was Sam the bartender in Gunsmoke. Roy Barcroft. I mean, we're talking some big extras here. So, oh, and you brought along
Here we go. Just to give you an idea, Dick Foran portrays a fellow named Jim Benton. Leo Carrillo, yep. Poncho from Cisco.
That's right.
And one of the early stars in the early days, his family is one of the foundation families of the Spanish days.
Wow.
Leo Carrillo Park is named after him.
Wow.
Buck Jones, of course, and his character's name is Tombstone.
Great. Charles, that one's from Universal, right?
I believe it is.
I think so.
Quick.
It was one of Universal's first or most expensive?
Well, no, this Universal was doing way back. Okay. But, yeah. Well, it doesn't say here. It should say here.
Yeah, I thought it did. Well, anyway.
That's all right. We'll find out. If we find out, we'll tell you. Yeah. Now, Charles Bickford,
yep.
who was a big silent star
That's
for
right.
DeMille,
yep.
he's the lead heavy.
Yep.
His name is Wolf Reed. Don't mess with me. And then one of my all-time favorites is Gwen Big Boy Williams.
Mm-hmm.
He's Borax Bill.
I love the names. Love the names.
And then Lon Chaney Jr., he's the number one or dog heavy. And the way they've got it here is Henchman Butch. Butch.
The man of a thousand faces. Yeah.
And then Noah Beery Jr. is Smokey.
Yep.
He's one of the good guys.
Yep.
And from what I understand, he didn't have a lot to do, but they wanted him in there. The more people.
Well, exactly.
Gene Brooks was the damsel in distress repeatedly. Those damsels are always in distress.
I've got to rescue them.
And I guess at that time, she was going by the name of Jeannie Kelly. And then James Blake was Joseph Kirby. Monty Blue, one of my favorites again, who was a full-blooded Indian,
really?
By the way.
Interesting.
He was Rance Davis. Then Glenn Strange, as you mentioned, and he's Tex, a Benton writer.
Mm-hmm.
That means he was probably a good guy.
I've seen him as a bad guy and a good guy,
Bad guys. He's 6'4", the size and the voice.
Yeah.
And another one of the great bad guys.
Roy Barcroft.
Henchman Dick. I mean, he had to be upset that he was Dick and not Butch.
Yeah, well.
They probably fought over that.
They probably paid him a little extra.
And then, Jack Rockwell, and this is the best henchman, Trigger. Yeah, he's the gunman, you know that. And then Ethan Laidlaw, who did just work forever in these things, always one of the gang.
Mm-hmm.
Once in a while, he'd be a deputy or a sheriff, but mostly just a lower henchman, and he was Rusty. And then finishing up with Richard Alexander. Now, he had to be important because here's one of the things. He had two names, a first and a last name, and there used to be the old thing is if you only had one name, then your part was a smaller part.
Mm-hmm.
And he was Pete Grump. Me Grump because I'm grumpy.
I bet he's a storekeeper.
Yeah. No, he was a henchman.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say either a storekeeper or a livery stable.
Oh, yeah. Well, one thing, too, though, a lot of times these guys like Laidlaw or him, if they were a storekeeper, you knew they were going to get killed.
Yeah, exactly.
The bad guys that hold them up, they get killed.
Yeah. Or the banker.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, that's coming up on the fourth Saturday of July 2018. on the National Day of the Cowboy down at the Empire Ranch, and there'll be more information about that coming out as we get closer to it. And there's 15 episodes, 15 chapters to this particular serial, and by golly, we're going to run them all.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's just kind of getting off on that little tangent. That just shows you we're kind of like a couple of guys herding a herd of cats.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But it's a lot of fun.
Hey,
yeah.
You know.
I got a story to tell you sometime about my Uncle Alvin Nix, our great uncle. He drove ahead a great frog trail drive in Texas.
All right. I'm willing to hear that now.
You want to hear it now?
Since you brought it up.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, this is kind of a family story, but way back here in the early days of the Depression, part of my family was Texans, my mother's side, and part of that family lived over in East Texas. Well, the market was down on livestock and cattle because of the drought and because of the Depression. And all the old ranchers there, they were kind of worrying because, you know, old Snidely down at the bank, he was, you know, kind of rubbing his fingers together and smiling because the mortgages were coming due pretty soon.
Right. Nobody had dollars.
And great Uncle Alvin, he came up with this idea. He says, boys, you know, we're right here on the Texas-Louisiana line. Not too far. Not too close. He says, you know, there's a lot of frogs around here. Now, we got together and we gathered up all these frogs into one big herd and we drove them down to New Orleans because I've read that there's a big market in frog legs down there.
Yep.
I said, boys, we can make a killing. So they thought, they mulled it over and they decided, well, hey, why not?
Okay.
So they gathered up them frogs, you know, and they got them all together, and they started heading them out to Louisiana.
Uh-huh.
Well, there's a couple of dry stretches in between there.
Uh-huh.
That and their little frogs, you know, they're not used to being away from water much. About the second day out on the trail, their little feet started getting sore, and they were bogging down. They wouldn't move. You couldn't push them. I mean, they're, you know, snapping bull whips at them, whacking them on their little froggy butts with a rope. They weren't moving. And Uncle Alvin, being the bright one of the bunch, he says, you know what, guys? He says, you know, we got a couple of spare wheels here on the chuck wagon. Why don't we just build us a big fire, melt one of those rims down, get those, and make little bitty frog shoes like horseshoes. He says, that'll work. And they thought, well, you know, we're here. We might as well give it. So they did it.
Okay.
And by golly, them little froggies, they looked at them shoes and they tapped them on the ground and they said, well, that ain't bad. So they started moving them.
Nobody threw a shoe, did they?
No, it wasn't that far.
Okay.
Yeah, enough to get there. So anyhow, they're driving, and of course, they're a long ways from water now because they've left the swampy part. They've gone through this dry part.
Uh-huh.
Now they're getting close to the Mississippi.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's when tragedy hit.
Yeah, you can't drive frogs across the Mississippi.
Well, no. What happened? What happened is them frogs smelled that water.
Uh-huh.
And they stampeded.
Stampeded.
It's just like cattle. From, you know, they've been awful. They stampeded. And, I mean, it was frightening. These cowboys were trying to turn them.
Uh-huh.
Horses were going down.
Uh-huh.
And they were getting trampled by frogs.
Uh-huh.
Well, the frogs hit the river. And, they, you know, they thought, hey, man, we got, well, them little steel hooves on their feet.
Made them sink.
They sunk to the bottom. And they all drowned. So they, you know, they kind of gave up, went back. But the one nice thing was that the old Snidely, he kind of took pity on them because he thought this was kind of a really dumb thing.
Uh-huh.
And he figured he could probably extend the mortgage, get a little more money, and then really stick it to them.
Yeah, right.
Well, a couple years go by, and we're getting closer to World War II now.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, my own Uncle Alvin, great old Uncle Alvin, he's reading in the paper where there's a good market in scrap iron. So he got all of his buddies together.
They go diving.
They went down to the Mississippi. They got buckets, put them on their heads, went down, gathered up all them little froggy shoes,
uh-huh.
And they made enough money to pay off the menu,
okay.
off the mortgage.
Uh-huh.
And so it was a happy ending to the great frog stampede.
Except
for the frogs.
That's a great story, Bunker. I don't even know where to go with after that.
And, you know, there's, I could have broke it into two parts, you know, the trail drive and then the salvage,
right,
and we'd have had a cereal.
Yeah, right.
A two-parter.
You know, we should produce something like that.
Do a little kiddies animated thing here.
Oh, God.
We could do an animated cartoon
on
the radio.
Yeah. No frogs were harmed during the production of this.
Jeez.
Okay.
Where are we here?
I don't even know where we're at.
Well, the cats got loose. Yeah.
Goodness
well,
sakes.
I want to talk a second here about Jock Mahoney.
Ah, yes.
One of the great stuntmen of all time.
Yeah.
And he did a couple of serials. You know, he did Cody of the Pony Express, which mm-hmm. they did up at Big Bear, California. And what else did I have there? Oh, he made Iron Horse. That was around Carson City, Nevada. And then, this is something, another thing I like, his leading lady was Peggy Stewart. The director was Spencer Gordon Bennett again,
mm-hmm.
who, as I mentioned, while you were getting a drink of water,
mm-hmm.
he was directing the early serials in the late 20s
mm-hmm.
and directed the last two serials made for Columbia in 56.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And listen,
yeah, they have, every now and then, the Westerns channel runs some Jock Mahoney pieces overnight, late night, and when I find those, I tape them and watch
4 hours day and night.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they don't do it during prime time, but you know, those old ones are, you know, the critics call them, give them 2 stars, but you have to take it at what it is. Don't look for great acting in this. Don't look for great scenery. Look for lots of action.
Yeah.
Because that's what it is, lots of action.
Well, you just think now, good old great Uncle Alvin, if he went down to the local Bijou, you know, and on a Saturday morning or even for the late.
Uh-huh.
These serials played all day back
then. That's right,
then.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you'd ask him how many stars he'd give it. He'd say, well, as many as there are in the Texas sky.
There you go, and that's a lot of them.
That's a lot of stars. And although the Jock Mahoney's were done for Republic. And then later, just to give you an idea, Spencer Gordon Bennett directed 20 of the last 21 serials that Republic made.
Hmm.
That's pretty impressive in itself.
That's a lot of work.
That's a lot more than some people's careers.
Yeah. And on that note, we got to take another break. You are listening to Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. And when we get back, we'll explain who the devil Emil Franzi was so that you understand why we call it Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. We're talking about serials, Western serials, on this particular show.
Chapter 3 coming up.
We'll be right back.
Emil Franzi's Voices of the West will be right back.
Wills, trusts, powers of attorney, guardianship, and probate. There's only one attorney you need to help you with these important issues. Ron Zach. Every client is treated with respect, consideration, and compassion. You deserve legal help that is understandable and affordable. Ron Zach listens and explains the issues to you. Call Ron today, 331-3232. All calls are returned within 24 hours, or visit TucsonEstatePlanning.com. That's TucsonEstatePlanning.com.
Lenny's Truck and Auto, 622-7200, wants to know, is your check engine light on? The reason is, that's known in the industry as the Lenny's Light. They have expertise in handling electronic repairs. Oh, and if that check engine light is on, you can't run it through emissions. Of course, you can always test the tender mercies of the state-licensed emissions monopoly, but Lenny works on cars, not masochists. Their specialty electronic scanning equipment will read the codes generated by your check engine light and tell you just what parts need to be replaced, and more importantly, what parts don't need to be replaced. Lenny's at 622-7200. Is a Napa Auto Care facility carrying nationwide warranties on parts and labor with 85 years of combined experience, brakes, front end, and engine repair. Lenny's Truck and Auto, 622-7200, 622-7200.
Join us at the Empire Ranch for the annual Empire Ranch Roundup and Open House on Saturday, November 4th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. You'll experience what life on a ranch was like in the 1880s. Cowboy demonstrations, cowboy talks, B-Troop 4th U.S. Calf, music, chuck wagon food, and a silent auction. Free admission, $10 donation for parking. It's tons of family fun. The Empire Ranch Roundup and Open House, Saturday, November 4th at the historic Empire Ranch. Take Interstate 10 to the Sonoyta exit and follow the signs. More information at Empire Ranch Foundation.
Welcome back to Emil Franzig's Voices of the West.
And welcome back to Emil Franzig's Voices of the West.
What was that song,
that
Harry?
Was the theme to Riders of Death Valley, the one that we're going to be showing in 15 parts down at the Empire Ranch on the fourth Saturday of July for National Day of the Cowboy. You know, we're only one of three places in Arizona that celebrates that day.
Yeah. You know, and the funny thing, we were tied with Prescott for being the first, and this was like about the eighth or ninth year into it.
Yeah.
Arizona was kind of, what's wrong with our leaders in the state that they always drag their feet, and they're still not behind it. It's up to us folks that just love our heritage to keep it alive and keep it going.
I think they probably want to forget about the heritage.
They do. And they want to be in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
What a horrid thought.
All right, so I promised we would divulge who the devil Emil Franzig was. And Emil started this program,
about 9 years ago.
9, 10 years ago on commercial radio. And the man was a student of the West and Western history, and just loved it. The music, the movies, the actors, the directors, the writers, producers. If it had something to do with the West, he was on it.
You know, you'd think it might have had something to do with the fact that his dad had a theater and he could go to the movie anytime he wanted.
I'm sure that had something to do with it as well.
What a great opportunity for a young buck.
So I had the opportunity and the privilege to produce the program while it was on commercial radio. And unfortunately, Emil passed on in June, and we're continuing this program on in his legacy.
And we might also point out that he was the force behind us going to a podcast.
Indeed. Indeed.
That's what he wanted.
When we left commercial radio, we started the program up on the internet, and here we are again. Here we are still.
Driving frogs.
And we're going to keep on driving as best
keep
as...
Keep them frogs a-moving. Frog hide.
Frog hide. Roll them.
Rug it. Ribbit. Ribbit.
Jump them. Jump them. Rawhide.
Well, you know, I got another story for you here. As long as we're being very serious about our topic.
All right.
You know, when I was a little guy, I used to go to school, and on the way to school, there was this big pond, mm-hmm. and there was a big old fat bullfrog that would sit out there.
Mm-hmm.
Every morning, you know, being a kid, you know how I am anyway.
Yeah, right.
I'd go by and I'd say, "Hi there, Mr. Bullfrog, how are you today?" And he'd go, "Ribbit, ribbit." And, you know, this would come back. I'd come back from school, and he'd still be sitting out there.
Mm-hmm.
"How's your day, Mr. Bullfrog?" Ribbit, ribbit. Mm-hmm. Well, this went on for a long, long time. Anyhow, mm-hmm. one day, this was during summer vacation, I go down and I'm spending a little time by the pond, you know, we're kind of bonding a little bit,
okay.
you know. And I said, you know, how are you today, Mr. Bullfrog? Ribbit, ribbit. I said, "Hey, by the way, how deep is this pond anyway?" "Knee deep, knee deep."
Oh, dear France, I don't know what I'm going to do with you.
Get the rubber room ready.
Apparently.
That's the way my brain is. All this stuff is mulling around there.
Oh,
you know.
Man.
You notice there's two frog stories in a row.
I know. There's, you must be hungry for frog legs.
Yeah.
What else we got there?
Well, you know, we can't talk about Westerns or cereals without talking about Yakima Canuck.
Indeed.
And what's fortunate is I've got a piece here that it was kind of a series of questions that a fellow, a great artist, and wrote about the Western movies a lot, Mario DiMarco, he did an interview with Yak about the cereals. And I'm just going to skip around at some of the questions and stuff. But he asked him, you know, what was the first cereal that he'd ever worked on.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought for a moment, he says, you know, he says, "It's almost impossible to recall because there's just so darn many of them."
Mm-hmm.
He said that he began in the silent years, worked over at Universal for a while, then Columbia, and then went over to Mascot, which became Republic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where everybody really remembers him. And he literally really revolutionized the stunt business. And he says, well, and then Mario asked him, says, "Well, was any job dangerous? And if you went about it, what was your most dangerous time?" And he said, "Well, any job was dangerous, but if you went about it the wrong way, it was really dangerous." And because that just shows you his mindset, because he was a master at planning how to do these things safely.
Did you study under him?
No, I didn't. I
know you got to meet him.
I never got to work with him, although he lived about I lived over off, I was living in Victor French's guest house, and he lived over off of Riverside, right on the corner of, I can't think of the street. It was about 5 or 6 blocks mm-hmm. away. And a lot of times I'd be driving by and I'd see him out in the yard watering. And I had met him, so I didn't feel bad about stopping and saying hi. Generally, I'd just pull over, talk over the fence. Mm-hmm. And he was, you know, it was funny because we got together for coffee and we'd bring somebody over, you know, wanted to meet him. And if they started asking questions about the movie business, he'd shut up and he wouldn't talk.
Wow.
But if you go, well, what year was it you won the Theodore Roosevelt Trophy? He'd be off and going. Wow. He'd talk for an hour and 2 hours.
I have a picture that you gave me of you and Yak, and I can't remember the
Art
other
Bradford.
Person. Okay. So, yeah, I have that.
Yeah. So. Well, I'm glad you still have it.
Yes, sir.
You know, the canary hasn't besmirched it yet.
Oh, no. It's safely put away.
Yeah, well, good. Yeah, see. Oh, there was a question here, too, about they asked him, because this is probably the obvious question. Did you work with Wayne in any of the serials? And his answer pretty much was, yes, I did, while he was at Mascot. I was responsible for breaking him in. He was a swell guy to work with and a good stuntman himself.
Really?
Which he was. That's the thing. We forget that these guys that were doing the serials that were, you know, some of them were professional cowboys, circus mm-hmm, guys, mm-hmm. Theater actors. But the one thing was almost, I would say 90%+, the men and the women were doing their own stunts.
But they were recognized first as actors and actresses as opposed to other as
that's
opposed
how they were
to
presented.
Stuntmen.
Yeah. They didn't go, you know, here's Hopalong Cassidy, the great stuntman, and also an actor.
Right.
They never mentioned that part.
Right, okay.
But they also wanted the audience to believe. Mm-hmm. And in the early days, they had good reason to, because these guys were doing this stuff. There's a stunt, and there's a great picture of it. I've seen it on a cover of a couple of books, and it's in any books that it has Tom Mix in it. It used to be the old Cahuenga Pass there between Hollywood and Studio City. Mm-hmm. Was a narrow pass. And back in the 1700s, Mexican vaquero, and this you're talking about something that's several hundred feet up to the ground, and jumped it. Tom Mix did it in one of his silence.
Wow.
And there's this great still of him midair between both. If you don't make it, you don't make it.
Wow.
You know, and that's what, and these guys, they were daredevils, but they weren't daredevils in the sense of, you know, no safety. It's like, he had one of the greatest horses in the business, Tony, mm-hmm. and he was fearless himself. There's a great story, and I can't remember the picture, but he was doing a picture where he was chasing the bad guys who were in a Model T. Imagine that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're riding down the road, and he's gaining on them. Well, guess what? There's a train along the track.
Imagine that.
You wonder what's coming up.
Uh-huh.
Oh, there's a crossing. Oh, my goodness.
Well.
The Model T makes it. It's too late for them. Circles Tony, and as the train's going by, he sees a couple of flat cars coming. Now, bear in mind that the track, you know, the rails, they're up on a berm.
Yes,
so there's maybe about a foot, 2 foot uh-huh. high berm.
Yep.
And then, you know, the height of the wheels. So you're talking about a jump that's Olympic size, right?
Easily.
So he spins Tony around a couple of times, takes off, and he does the jump. They didn't make it. They crashed. He went to the hospital and was laid up for a couple of months. Mm. Tony wasn't hurt at all. When he got out of the hospital, they went back, did the shot again, and made it.
Wow.
That's the kind of guys they were.
Now, you've done stunts, and how do you prepare for this? I mean, you walk through what is supposed to happen, and then you look at all the safety angles behind it, and in front of it and beside it, I imagine, right?
Well, your question is, how do you prepare?
Yeah.
Very carefully. No, it really is. It's like, you know, you play it in your mind. If it's a stunt you've done a lot,
mm-hmm.
you know, familiarity can sometimes be your best friend or your worst enemy.
It's like riding a bicycle.
Yeah, because you can make mistakes because you get
sure.
too overconfident.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But what you try to do is you try to look for things that could obviously go wrong, like if you're doing, let's just say, one of the most basic saddle falls.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one that's gone wrong more times than we'd like to admit. because what will happen is first you go out there and you find an area where the director wants you. The director and the cameraman, generally first early in the day, they go out and they say, well, we're going to do it over here. So you go out there, you dig up the area, you maybe bring in a load of sand, you take all the big rocks, all this, anything that can hurt you, and you throw it away so it's just safe. Mm-hmm. And then just before the stunt, a bunch of stunt guys will go through again, which, just to make sure, you know. Well, one of the things that can happen, and I've seen this happen more than what I'd like to admit, but you're getting ready to do it, and they have a habit of saving the stunts a lot of times to the end of the day, unless it's just really a super major stunt, mm-hmm. so that they can shoot the actors and get them out of there because they're on overtime, and right. that's big money.
Right.
Well, all of a sudden the cameraman looks through there and he says, oh, the light's wrong. We can't shoot it here. And so all of a sudden they're picking a new spot. You're out there, and all you're doing is you're just quick as you can throwing all the bigger rocks out of the way because mm-hmm. you can't get them all, and you end up doing it on the hard ground. The other thing that'll happen is you'll be doing the shot, and the director is going to give you an off-camera cue with a gun, right? So you're riding up, and you're getting it. Got a nice, big, huge area to do your fall in. Might even be a sandy riverbed, mm-hmm. and you're getting up, and you're getting up, and you're getting to it, and you're getting... No gunshot. All of a sudden, now you're starting to get into the hard pan. Bang! Down you go. But I'll give you another. This is personal. I was doing a High Chaparral, and in this particular episode, I was an Indian, and we had captured a bunch of the cannons. And myself and one of the Indian boys, we were holding Buck, you know, Cameron Mitchell. Mm-hmm. And first, you have to be sneaky holding him because first thing he said is, well, "Don't hurt me too. Don't grab me too much because you know it hurts." Well, that's like him saying to us, "I'm going to break away." Uh-huh. That's the way he was, uh-huh. you know. So we're going okay, and we're going. What are we going to do? Because we did the rehearsal, you know. I said, "Grab his belt, and just put your hand on the arm, and let him do whatever he wants to do. We'll just pull on the belt." So that day we got the shot, but then. You know, the last part of the shot is some of the other ranch, Chaparral Rams, come riding up to the rescue, right? Mm-hmm. So we all break and run because we're cowardly bad guys.
Right, right.
So Henry Darrow is supposed to shoot me, and I'm running across the desert, right? So they say, okay, and Henry Will says, okay, when you get out there, you know, when you hear the shot, take it and drop. You know, oh, great, you know. Well, they never told me that there was dialogue.
Oh,
so you know, so when they holler action, I take off. You know, I'm trying to burn it up. I'm trying to outdo Dean Smith, yeah, which right. nobody could do. Fastest man in the world. But anyhow, I'm cranking away, and then in my mind I'm going, why isn't he shooting? Why aren't you shooting? And I'm thinking, should I stop and look back? Is there something wrong? You know, and I didn't hear him all cut. And I'm running. And then just as I'm getting out there, there's a little wash out.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like run down it or jump over it. Uh-huh. Right? And it's just, oh, it's easier to jump. If I run down it, I've got to go. It's easier to trip. Or yeah. I want to look good.
Right, right.
So I jump. And just as I'm in the air, about mid-arc, bang!
Oh.
So it's like, I'm not prepared. So I go down, and so all I can do is I throw my hands down to break the fall. My hand hits, one of the hands, it pops back, hit me in the nose. I broke my own nose.
Oh, my God.
You know, and then, of course, I get up, and my eyes are kind of watery, and they go, okay, I'm going, yeah, I'm okay. You know, and I'm kind of, you know, walking in circles there, trying to get the tears out of my eyes and like that. But, you know, it's just, those are the things that happen, you know.
Wow, wow.
And it's fun.
Yes, definitely. On that note, we're going to take another break. We'll be back with more of Emil Franzi's Voices of the West right after this.
Emil Franzi's Voices of the West will be right back.
Hymas Wilkinson Investments, 777-1911, is a unique investment management firm. They pay little attention to where the market indicators are because smart investment management goes way beyond checking stock exchanges. They are very good at managing all types of investment based on client expectations. They build relationships, and they want clients, not customers. My family is proudly included among them, and they'll help you, as they did us, design a portfolio that achieves what you want when you need it. Hymas Wilkinson Investments, they're really good at what they do. 777-1911.
Hello, I'm Mr. Red.
No doubt you've heard about rescue groups for dogs and cats, but did you know there's a rescue group for horses? That's right, it's called Horse It Around Rescue. Founders Steve Boyce and Teresa Worrell are helping out all those equine victims of neglect and cruelty by giving them a place to restore their health and wellness. And Horse It Around provides a nurturing and natural environment where horses can be horses, so they can be adopted out into forever homes. More than 120 horses, mules, and donkeys have been adopted out, but like everything else, it costs money to run the project. Horse It Around is a 501c3 nonprofit located in Southeast Arizona. Your tax-deductible donations to Horse It Around will go a long way so those horses can be horses. Check out the website, horseitaroundrescue.org. Make a difference in a horse's life. That's horseitaroundrescue.org.
Besides bringing millions a year into this community with national and international events, the Tucson Trap and Skeet Club at 7800 West Old Ajo Highway services the local shooting sports community with a 380-acre site featuring trap, skeet, five stand, and two sporting clays fields, as well as a 9,000-square-foot clubhouse, which all is available to local shooters, and soon, an archery range. Check it out at TucsonTrapAndSkeet.com or take a drive out west of town and see it for yourself. New members or single-day use, welcome.
Welcome back to Emil Franzig's Voices of the West.
And we are back on Emil Franzig's Voices of the West. You know, the music that was used in these serials, I mean, it connotates the, or signifies the urgency.
The thrill.
The thrill of it all. Yeah. Yeah.
The heart is racing.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, will they,
well,
will
he
make it?
What was that last piece you
that
just
was raced? From Zorro Rides Again, and that was 1937.
And it starred John Carroll.
Yep.
Oh. Yeah. Well, you wanted to know how these kind of ended up.
Well, before we go there,
okay.
I just wanted to mention that for those who are interested in learning more or even watching, because you can't find some of these anymore unless you're lucky enough to they come across on the satellite or someplace. I remember going to Davis-Monthan Air Force Base years and years ago to watch the old Batman serials. Mm-hmm. And you can't find a lot of these. Well, if you go to internetarchive.org, type in Western serials or cowboy serials, or old-time serials, you'll find a bunch of them. Big-time list.
Quick.
Yes.
Quick quiz. Your two favorite serials.
You know, I'm going to have to go with Riders of Death Valley because I've been watching them.
You know, that's good. Yeah.
Outside of that, I can't give you an answer on that.
Well, that's an easy one for me.
Okay.
My all-time favorite serial is The Phantom Empire with Gene Autry.
Ah, yeah.
I love that. And then my second favorite, and almost, I think it's a tie, really. It's Gordon of Ghost City with Buck Jones, which probably is the greatest Western serial.
Now, see, I like Buck Jones, and that's why I'm watching Riders of Death Valley. But I also like the old sci-fi serials.
Mm-hmm.
And the Dick
Dick Buster Tracy. Crabby,
Flash Gordon, Dick Tracy, Radar Man from
Buck
the Moon,
Rogers.
Think about this
Buster Crabby, who again is one of my favorite, but he played more literary icons.
Mm-hmm.
Tarzan.
Mm-hmm.
Buck Jones, Flash Gordon. He was Billy. He had a series in the Western movies, Billy the Kid.
Yep.
You know, and people don't realize how loved these guys were.
Yeah, you have to be quite the Hollywood aficionado to.
Yeah.
Either that,
or you got to be older than mud. You know, that's
well,
our case. You know,
we're not quite there yet, but
we're starting to dry up.
All right, so move on.
Well, you wanted to know about the failing days of the serials.
Yeah.
And so just to give you an idea, 1956 was the last year for Columbia, and they were the ones that lasted the longest. And they had two serials out that year. both of them Westerns. Perils of the Wilderness with Dennis Moore, and Blazing the Overland Trail with Lee Roberts. Now, just to give you an idea, going back and covering some of the other for like Republic, they went until 55.
And how long did Republic stay in business?
Well, Republic was bought out by, if I remember right, by Desilu.
Okay.
And so Republic, the studios itself is still there. It's right there in Studio City there.
Mm-hmm.
It's called something else. And I can't even remember the name of it. Mm-hmm. It's something City or something like that. But it's still an active studio. I love the studio because it was right there. And this is the old Republic was on the old L.A. River before it was paved. It became a cement river. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times when you were seeing the guys, you know, splashing across the creek.
That was right there.
They were, you know, 100 yards from the soundstage, you know.
That was the back lot.
the San Fernando Valley was the back lot. You know, talk about, you know, California back then was the perfect place, you know. And then, you know, it became the Santa Clarita Valley, Simi Valley, up by Acton, you know, up in that area. That whole, you know, the history of that, you go through there, and it's like, well, to give you a sad example, it's like the history of film in Tucson. There are so many places that they don't, you know, downtown at the corner of Congress and, what's the cross street for Pennington? Anyhow, there's where the Petrocelli law office was, and up until the 90s, the window still had Petrocelli attorney at law on it.
Right.
Well, somebody decided that was, you know, that couldn't. But that, think about it. If a person came to Tucson and they wanted something to do besides walk in the desert or you know, sit under the air conditioning or, you know, slug away in a bar, a nice little tour map of the moving locations of Southern Arizona.
Yeah, walking tour.
Which would break you down to the Empire Ranch.
There you go, because there were tons of them filled down there.
Yeah. And let's see. Moving on. See, we did Republic and we did Columbia. Okay, Universal, they went until 46. They quit early. And the last Western that they did was the Royal Mounted Rides again with Bill Kennedy in 45. And then, of course, Mascot, which became Universal, their last one was 35, but you can't really count that because they had morphed into Republic, a much bigger studio.
Do you reckon it was the economics of the time that dictated that they no longer do this? The features were selling much better. Serial actors were retiring, a combination of things?
I think one of the, especially like in the case of Columbia that was still going on, is that when you look at 1956, television.
Sure.
Because television was hurting theater attendance.
That it was.
All the way, you know, from the movies. So it had to affect. And just think about us little kids in the 40s and 50s, and then the little kids in the 50s and the 60s.
Yeah.
They're watching Hopalong Cassidy, the old Cassidy movies. They're I can remember, that's where I got all my Buck Jones and Ken Maynard. Because I was watching the same movies my dad watched when he was a kid. And it was like, it was like growing up in the 20s and 30s.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
What else we got to? Well, almost out of time here.
The Independents, they went until 37. And the last Western that I have there that I know of is Custer's Last Stand, which was done by Stage and Screen Release. And that was in 1936. And just to give you a quick idea, like the independent companies, here's some of the names of the companies, which I know some I never heard of. Ben Wilson Release, Syndicate Pictures Corporation Release, Metropolitan Release, RKO Radio, which that became a big studio. Principal again, First Division, Screen Attractions Corporation, Kelberg Release, Burroughs Tarzan, Edgar Rice Burroughs, actually, because they did some Tarzan serials. Stage and Screen, which we just hit on again, and Victory Release. And again, there wasn't that many of the independents, but, you know, I could say, well, just to give you a quick total here, with Republic, there was 53 serials, Columbia 54, Universal 56, Mascot 57, and Independent 58 serials. Wow. So you're looking at what, 250, about the same number as the Silence.
Hmm. We can continue with this again.
And we may.
And we just may do that, do another shot on...
To be continued. Will Harry get out of the bathroom in time? Will Bunker remember to get up in the morning? Stay tuned.
We'll be back.
Thanks for listening to Abel Francis' Voices of the West this time around. Join us again next Saturday, 4 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. Catch it all the time on the Voices of the West Network. And our podcast as well. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening. See you then.
Adios.
Listening to Emil Franzi's Voices of the West.